How do you let go of people and or situations that you feel haunted by? There's one way that usually works that I found that works, and that is kind of in a contemplative stance. You bring that person or situation to mind. You can contemplate, you can get your mind into kind of a deeper place, you know, a place of just being with your own nature and the accepting nature, the naturally accepting nature of your own being. Also your own being is something that's really untouchable. In other words, it can't be harmed or hurt or changed or modified in any way by whatever thoughts or feelings or experiences that you're having. And so that becomes something experientially known to you just when you slow down, become with yourself and get in touch with that instead of your mind running all over. So get in that meditative space and then basically welcome that situation into your mind or that person into your mind and just sit there. Say it's haunting, that it's haunting you. What would happen if you just let it haunt you? Just sit there, be with that person, and let that person say whatever scary things they say or do whatever they say, and you just accept it. It's kind of like, okay, you can be with me, you can be with me. Because often part of this haunting feeling is that your mind is in the sense of feeling haunted or being concerned about this person, you're grabbing that onto them to keep them away. Yeah, and so they're always there, because your mind, in its very defending against them, is keeping them present, you know. And so what if you experiment with not defending, and you just let that person be there and go through whatever feelings are there around that, and then accept those feelings and that other person might be imaginably saying all kinds of things to you, or you might be feeling all kinds of things toward that person or that situation. Just accept them all. After all of these experiences and all of these feelings and reactions that we have, they all are part of Ishwara. Another thing you can do with that, once you accept it and just let it be there, you can also do things with it, like you can go back in the past and look at all of the things that happened in your past, all of the different cause-effect threads that brought you to this situation, in this unhappy situation that you find yourself in. And from the other side, whoever else is involved, look at everything that came together to create this this very unpleasant situation that you wish would just go away. So that you can get more objectivity, because actually these effects that we find ourselves in, they're really Ishwara, right? They've been produced. They've been produced in Vyavahara, in a sense. They're existing there as part of Ishwara. And so you let Ishwara have them. They're his anyway, you know. And you just take responsibility for your own reactions. Those are Ishwara also, even the Pratibhasika. The subjective reactions are Ishwara also, because there's nothing that's away from Ishwara. The only thing, reason why we call them Pratibhasika or subjective reactions and emotions and likes and dislikes and ajnanam, ignorance-based ways of being in the world, we say that those are Jiva Srishti, they're the Jivas, the individual's creation, because they're rooted in the individual, but the individual is rooted in Ishwara. So, in a sense, you give the whole thing over to Ishwara. You can even give the jiva over to Ishwara, the whole getting kabula, because it's like the ocean saying, okay, I give myself to you. The wave says, I give myself to you, O ocean. Yeah. Even though I am a separate entity and everything, I give myself to you. Because actually there is nothing but Ishvara. And so what you want to do is work with your own fear, your own feeling of being haunted. Yeah. And then that takes some courage sometimes to just sit and be with that. And then see what happens when you're with it and accepting it. Watch what modifications go on there. You know. And if you, as you're sitting with this difficult situation, or this difficult person, whatever it is, if you find yourself really reacting and being hurt by the presence of that in your imagination, then focus more on yourself, who's so hurt, the part of you that's so hurt and so reactive, and say, that's okay, you just be with me. And then you accept all of the feelings that you're having, because you're not able yet to accept or to welcome just being in this difficult situation, because you yourself, your mind, has too much reaction to it. But that's fine. You say, okay, let that go, and let me just be with you. You can be with me. And then you just sit and totally welcome all of those feelings, all of those reactions. You can even say, tell me, ask yourself, the one who's feeling so hurt, tell me about it. Tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what's so hurtful. And let that part of you really talk it out. You don't need to interrupt. Like I said, that part is telling you this and that. And you say, oh, no, it's not like that. Well, it is like that to that part of you. It is like that. And so then you have to understand that. You know? The main thing is getting yourself to be both the subject and object, the one who's been kind of traumatized, who feels haunted, and the haunted, the situation that is haunting, or the person that is haunting. So you have to become comfortable with both the subject and the object. The one who's haunted and the thing that is haunting. To be able to sit with both and say, it's okay. And all the while, you can always go back into your own presence and realize nothing is happening at all. Zero. So, and it's kind of, it's a way of dissipating the fear and the tension. That's one thing to try. I've done it myself. I know that it can work, but the mind might resist that or not be ready to do that, but that's the one thing that I think can be really helpful. Another thing that you can do in meditation, which I do up at the farm sometimes, where all of us go and sit by the stream, is offer the whole situation. Offer the whole situation, and I offer it into the stream. The stream is Ishvara, and Ishvara, I offer it to be just cleansed and purified and released from this. And I let Ishvara purify the whole situation and give it back to me as prasad. You know? And that's really beautiful, because if you ask Ishvara to take it from you, to purify it and to give it back to you in a transformed form, then when he gives it back to you, it's so surprising what it is sometimes. You know? You've offered it to him, he gives it back as prasad, and that prasadam is that form, that hauntedness coming back to you in something which is no longer haunted. So that's also, that can be an easier, maybe a first step, that's an easier one to do. And it's very rewarding also, because we should just give it all to Ishvara anyway, let him have it. It's too much of a burden for, yeah. You shouldn't be having to carry these things. They all belong to Bhagavan anyway, so let him have it. In fact, let him have the whole thing. Let him have, you know, your body and your mind and all of your ambitions and everything. Just boom, you know. And then, let me just be here. That's in the end, that's what we do. The whole thing becomes much too burdensome unnecessarily. You know? I'm sure Swamiji's taught in many different ways. Give the whole thing. Give the whole thing to Bhagavan. It's all his anyway. Yeah. I can just hear all the different ways he would say that. But it's true, you know, and the more you give, the more you want to give. Because it's just such a relief not to be carrying any of these worries or concerns. You know, and you just, your real task as a jiva, so to speak, a jiva that's not really even there. It's really all just Ishwar. But your task is to just do your best in the moment. Do your dharma in the moment. What's being asked of you now? What's here, you know, in front that Bhagavan's asking of you now? And you do that. In the next moment, you do that. In the next moment, you do that. Don't worry about anything else. It's all Ishwar. It's all his unfoldment. If you think, it's easy to understand if you think of the dream, like the dream character, and the dream can be so worried, what am I going to do, what am I going to do, what am I going to do? But actually, the dream character is part of the dream story. The story is taking place, and the character is part, the dream characters are part of that story that is already taking place. The script is already written, in a sense, you know? And so just relax, you know, and do your part in the script that's already unfolding. That's what it comes down to. And the thing is, the more you experiment with that, the easier it is for you just to live your life that way. See, if we look at the prarabdha karma, the very karmas that caused you to take this birth and take you all the way through to your death. Right? So those karmas, at the time of your death, your prior death, that caught before you were born, you know, at that time, the jiva, who you were at that time as body, mind, sense organs, sukshma, sharira, who you were at that type of time of death, when there's really no free will left, it's just who you are, you know, in terms of your thoughts and your emotions and your values and all of that on a subtle level. Just what is the crux of who you are at that moment of death? It's that person that attracts, that ahankara, that attracts all of the appropriate sanchitta karmas, the karmas of punya and papa that are there previously accrued. Those karmas that are appropriate for your next birth are what are attracted to that jiva. So they're actually the perfect karmas for you, who you are at the time of your death, and in reference to the world, the universe that you're incarnating into at that time, right? And so your life, whole life from birth to death, is like a piece in the puzzle. You know, you have your place. You have a place in the story of Bhagavan's story at this particular moment. You're a piece in that puzzle. You have you're an actor or actress in the play, you know, and your role is there. So you're supposed to do your role, right? You just do your role. Follow the script, you know. Follow the script means, but you know, what is there for me to do today? Let me do that. What is being asked of me here? Like if you were an actor or actress, you're following the script, you know. What's my role right now? What is being asked of me right now? That's what you do. Now what if you were to say, I don't want to do that? Well, okay, you don't want to do that, but the whole creation is going to have to adjust for you. You know? And you're going to be out of step with yourself. You'll be out of step with yourself. Because the life, yourself, I mean the Atma, but yourself, your body, mind, sense organs, your aspirations, everything, in terms of the prarabdha karma, which is all in place, and your upadhi, your body, mind, sense organs, which are all in place to play this particular role. But you see Joe Blow over here who seems to have it better, and I want to do what he's doing, or I want to do what she's doing, you know. But that's not your karma. And so that's really not going to work, you know, at all. You won't feel at home, you know, you won't really know what you're doing. You'll be kind of out of step. Nobody will know what you're doing there either, like, kind of like a lost sheep. You know? Because you went over and tried to hang on to somebody else's karma. And what actually happens is the universe, Ishwara, just bunts you back into place. But it can be kind of very uncomfortable, because you do have free will to a degree. You know, but you can, if you take that free will outside of your prarabdha karma, it's very uncomfortable. It's like you're not playing your role anymore. And you don't have a place there. You have a place here. You know? So if you just stay in the moment and relax and do your best, that's all you really need to do. And it makes for a very, very nice life. Because it works. Because the life works. You know, and sometimes you can become afraid and very worried because you're going into new territory, like we all do in life as the prarabdha unfolds. Sometimes you're going into very new territory and you don't know what's going to happen. You know, scary and all of that, and what's going to happen to me. But you also, if you look at it, when you get in those situations, if you don't do it, you'll feel like you're dying. And you have to do it. You have to do it, even though you can't see around the corner, you know. This thing is over. It's done. And if you don't move on, then you feel dead inside. So that's why the more you practice trusting the moment, the more strength you get in trusting the moment. It's really beautiful. But you have to stick yourself out there and practice. Yeah. Shraddha in Ishwara. In Shraddha in Ishwara, we all have Shraddha in Ishwara, but the Shraddha in Ishwara grows. And it grows by your courage. Yeah. It takes courage. Because the jiva can be very afraid. Because the jiva, the very fact that jivatvam is there means, kind of, if to put it in the most dark terms, to me, the most dark terms. This is an inert creation. I'm a little bubble of consciousness here, and I have got to make my way. Nobody's going to help me. You know? No one will help me. I have to do it. And if I don't do it, no one's going to feed me. Nobody's going to give me a job. Nobody's going to take care of me. I have to do it. I have to plan really well. In other words, I have to write the script. And then somehow I have to get everybody else to agree with the script. Oh, God. It's really, really terrible. When you think about what that means, you know, it's a very dark life. The jnani doesn't live that way at all. The jnani, as you gain knowledge, you just, this is your life. Every moment, this is the life. You're responding to your life. You're responding to your prarabdha vipaka karma. You're responding to Ishwara. You're not creating your life, you're responding to your life. It's totally different. When you're responding to your life, then Ishwara says, well, if you say, well, how should I respond to my life? Dharma. Just, that's all. Whatever life gives you, you respond to it within Dharma. And don't worry. Dharma is the great protector because Dharma is Ishwara. If you're within Dharma, you're taken care of by Ishwara. If you go outside of Dharma, you're butting up against the creation. And it's painful, you know. Because Bhagavan is going this way, with these values, with this type of heart. That's the nature of the creation. You go against it, and then, you know, in the kindness of the creation, it swats you back. Nope. No. It hurts you. It hurts you. Your mind suffers. But the suffering is not such a bad thing. When the suffering is there, you should say, okay, why am I suffering? What could I do differently? What could I do differently to relieve this suffering? And so it's a great educator. You have to contemplate on it. You know, the suffering is like, Bhagavan, you know, you're raising your hand, the suffering is raising the hand to call attention. So just take it as you need. You need to make an attitudinal adjustment, or maybe you need to behave differently in the moment. So it's really, and that's if you have knowledge and you know yourself and Ishwara, you understand Ishwara, you keep surrendering into that reality. And when you're not living that reality, then you realize that, and then you bring back your knowledge and surrender into that reality. That's how we learn. It's not that you gain knowledge, you start to gain clarity, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're just living the moment with as you know, surrender to Bhagavan, surrender to Ishwara, just doing the Dharma of what's being asked of you at that moment. It doesn't come immediately. That's a maturing in your knowledge. You know, because as you start getting knowledge, there's still all these little tentacles, you know. But what about this? And I kind of want this, and I need that, and I need that. So all of those things have to be brought, you have to keep bringing them back, you know, to yourself. It takes place gradually over time. The having the whole manas, the chitta, you know, your whole, all of your memories and all of your fluctuating mind and all of these moods, all of these emotions, all the unconscious material, to really rise up into your knowledge. Your buddhi has knowledge, but all this material has to come into your knowledge. And it'll come in ignorantly. It's coming, a lot of it coming up from the unconscious. It comes up totally ignorantly. But it's coming up ignorantly into your knowledge. And so then your knowledge, you know, holds it. And as it tries to have this reaction or do this or has this feeling, then the person into which all of this unconscious material is coming is a different person than the person before who didn't have any knowledge. And so you treat all of those reactions and all of those desires very differently, you know. And then all of these unconscious material and habitual ways of thinking transform in the light of your knowledge. But they have to present themselves to you. And when they present themselves to you, they're totally ignorant. That takes place over time. You know? And you can kind of enjoy that process. If you don't enjoy it, then it's unfortunate, because it's not realistic to think that your mind instantaneously transforms like some Shakti pot or something. It's not true. It's more like a flower. Unfolding. And as you gain knowledge, as you know, the more you know. The more you know, the more you know. The more you know, the more you know. Because the knowledge matches experience. Because it's knowledge. You know, so the experience always falls into line with your knowledge. That's what's so beautiful. You know what's going on, and you let this flower, let the flower unfold. So.
One thing that I find with trust in Ishvara and with my inner children is that sometimes there's this fear, like there's this fear that doesn't allow me to trust that everything is, you know, it's going to be okay or is okay, and that makes it hard to sort of surrender and let go of too much control or just relax into life. And then I find it, in some ways, it's hard to just tell the inner children that, you know, it's going to be okay, you're with me now and all of that, and we can trust in Ishvara and all, because I don't know what's in my future and what kind of papam is going to manifest and what kind of pain is going to come. And I'm not at that stage that when a lot of pain comes that I can just rest back in self-knowledge. Yeah, so then I do get overwhelmed by the pain, and it's very difficult. And then that fear is there inside. There's something.
What is the fear?
It's maybe undefined, I think. Just a fear that something very painful could happen if I let go of control, so to say.
But just so I really understand before I start talking, what would it? How would you let go of control?
Or maybe more to say, if I totally relax and let life unfold rather than trying to steer it, sort of holding on to the jiva shishti and the ideas that I have, that, yeah.
Sometimes you do things in baby steps, not in big steps. I mean, I'm going to get into the other, but the control issues, you can start by letting go of controls where you can and not think that I have to let go of everything. And you're not ready to let go of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of have a value, and there's many times even during a day when you don't know what's going to happen, you don't know what's around the corner. There are many, many, many opportunities for you to say, I don't know what's going to happen. Let's see what Ishwara does. Let's see how Ishwara handles this situation. Because you actually don't know how to handle it. Right? So that's a good thing to say. When you don't know how to handle it, kind of the answer hasn't come, so you don't even know what to control or how to control it. You know, then you are actually put in a position where you can kind of be interested to see what actually happens. Because most of the time, I find, in our life, we can only see so far about what is going to happen, and we can't see around the corner, you know. And until we're around the corner, then we can see. But we can't see around the corner till we get around the corner. Right? So that means that you can't know what to do, you can't see around the corner until you can. So how do you handle that period of time when you don't know what's going to happen and you can't see around the corner? You can't pretend that you can see around the corner. You'd be kind of lying to yourself. You really can't see. You really don't know. And so then you can say, I don't know. It's not, and understand it isn't the time for you to know. There's nothing you can do about that. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. And so then you can become interested in seeing, in kind of watching your life unfold. And eventually you will know, and then when you do know, there will be decisions to be made, but the decisions to be made will be obvious because you know what you're doing and where you are. So they're just the day-to-day decisions that Bhagavan gives to you to be made. And you won't have any problem. It's not a matter of control. This decision is here to be made. You make the decision within Dharma. There's no problem. The problem is that there's all these decisions that are going to have to be made and you don't even know what those are. So how are you going to handle that? And it's that realm where you become interested in Ishwara and say, let's see what Ishwara does. Let's see what Ishwara has in store for us. And that's where you can relax, because what is your choice? Either stress out and not know, or be relaxed with some Shraddha and Ishwara and not know. This not knowing realm is where our Shraddha really blesses us. Because if you don't know, you don't know. It's like you can stress all you want, but the answer is not going to be given to you until you reach that point where it becomes clear. See what I mean? So that's one, I think, important thing maybe to think about. The other that may cause more suffering for you and make all this hard to do is with working with the little ones. So the little ones don't really know about Ishwara. Right? So say if you were to say to the little ones, don't worry, I'll take care of you and we'll just do what Ishwara says. Who is Ishwara? All they want is to know that they're with you, you know. And whatever happens, you'll be there for them. Whatever happens, whatever it is. it's good, if it's bad, if it's terrifying, if it's whatever it is, you're their mom, and you will take care of them. And that's the mother's promise to her children. Even if mother will die to save her children, mother and father will do anything and everything to take care of and to save their child up to their death. They will, anything. And so, and that's what the child needs to know. You will be there to look after them and to be with them and to love them, no matter what. And so that's what they need, you know. And you would do that. How would you not do that? Are you going to say to the little ones inside that you already have a relationship with, I'm bored of you? I don't think so. There's a love there, there's a relationship there. And in that love, those children will gain their own, little ones will gain their own confidence. You know, you are their Ishwara, Ishwari. You know, you are that to them. You're the God for your parent, for your children. You know, and so as long as they know, you're the one that, you as the adult, needs to, we as adults, we depend on Ishwara, we relate to Ishwara, we pray to Ishwara, we tell Ishwara all of our doubts, all of our fears, to Bhagawan, you know. I'm worried about this, I don't believe in you, I don't understand you properly, please help me to understand you properly so that I can relax. You know, all of these things, that's the adult praying to Ishwara, having a real relationship, saying everything that's going on. You know, that's kind of a surrender. That's where the real love, the really love relationship is, that you never leave. Because you can be married, you can have friends, you can have children, all of these things. But first and foremost, you're related to Ishwara. I realized that when I was around 30. I was really sick with some silly thing. And I really thought I was going to die. I thought I only had a few months left, really. It's just some stupid hyperventilation that was making my body acidic. And I mean, it's so sick, but nobody could diagnose it. So I was so, so sick. And this time I did have knowledge, and I was realizing that my relationship is with Ishwara. And when I leave this planet, my relationship is still with Ishwara. Nothing happens between me and Ishwara. Between me and the whole, whether I'm on this level here in this waking state, or if I'm on other lokas, or I'm traveling, or my knowledge was such at that time, it wasn't such that I would just be Ishwara and the jiva totally dissipate. I didn't feel that for myself at that time. But that relationship with Ishwara is what you have, always. Never is going to falter. And so all of your fears and all of your worries and all of the complexes that are inside as an adult, you give those to Ishwara. And then Ishwara supports you. That's where you get your support. And then you take care of your little ones inside. You know? And then you're their Ishwara. You know, because you're everything to them. And they trust you that you'll be there and you'll love them and you'll care for them. They will be fine and they'll grow and not to worry. That's not the things they're worrying about, those are not their worries, you can tell them. These are not things for you to worry about, honey. These are things I will take care of. You don't worry. Little children are made to worry about things they should never worry about. You know? Their parents take care of these things. Why do they even have to ever even think about them? You know? I never thought about anything when I was there. I mean, I didn't. My parents were too strict and blah, blah, blah. But I never worried about anything. I never worried about money. I never worried about food. I never worried about not being able to go into the refrigerator after school and get something to eat. Never even occurred to me. Never worried about clothes. Never worried about anything. I just took it for granted that I was taken care of. I didn't even take it for granted in any kind of words. I didn't even think mom and dad are taking care of me. No gratitude or anything. It's just how it was, you know.
continue on?
Sure.
I was thinking about free will and wondering, does Ishvara have any free will apart from all of the jivas' free will?
Not really, and the way to think about that is because Ishvara already is infinite. All that exists already is his. So there's no decision to be made. There's infinite number of laws that kind of make the decisions themselves. You know, it's not like being a jiva where you don't have any knowledge and you think, well, should I do this or should I do that and what's going to happen to me? Mm-hmm. That should I do this and should I do that and what's going to happen to me is not going to take place in Bhagavan's mind, because Bhagavan's mind is not like that. It's not a limited mind within the creation. It's the whole infinite creation, you know. So thinking about that, now say, accepting that, now say you pray to Bhagavan for something. Then you might think, because kind of anthropomorphizing Bhagavan as a little man in heaven, you know, you think, Bhagavan, this situation is happening, you know. Would you please change your mind? Change your mind and do this instead, you know. Or would you do this for me? As the little man in heaven is going to hear your prayer and say, okay, I will do that for you. To pass through, I will do that for you. You deserve that. You're a good girl.
You've eaten your spinach every day.
You've been a good girl. You've done your dharma. You've been such a sweet girl. And you want that, then yes, of course you can have that. That's how we tend to think about Ishvara. But what if you think more like this, that in the scope of your life, in the prarabdha karma, and in the desires that are rising, there is something that you pray for, that you want. It might be in your prarabdha anyway to have that, but you don't know, right? Because you're not Ishvara, so you don't have that forevision to even know if it's in your prarabdha and possible. So you pray for it, and it may come true completely as being just really part of your prarabdha and part of the plan anyway. Or it can be that possibility is there for that to happen within the scope of your prarabdha. It's not outside of the possibility of your prarabdha. But it's also not a given. This is kind of like Jyotisha, you know. It's also not a given. But your prayer is a karma. The prayer itself is a manasa karma. It's a mental karma. And the prayer itself has an effect, you know, to make something happen. That's why they say, like, Swamiji has made a sankalpa that not to take that hemodialysis, and that he's ready, he's totally ready to go, he's definite about it. He's made up his mind, it's Ishvara Sankalpa. So he said, first he says, my Sankalpa, no, he saw clearly it's Ishvara Sankalpa. I am going to go now, I'm done. In so many kind ways, he said, it's over, and he's positive about it. But thousands and thousands and thousands of prayers, day in and day out, have been going on. Vishnu Sahasranama, you know, all day long, Bhagavad Gita chanting all day long, and on and on, rituals being done, all of the sannyasis gathering together, all of the devotees getting together, and as the Swami Vagishananda said, and all of the women sitting in a circle crying. You say they're all crying and saying, You're trying to kill our Swami and throw his body in the Ganga, you know? Swamiji cannot die now. You cannot die. So all of these devotees, you know, so many devotees of all different walks of life, you know, begging Bhagavan, begging Swamiji. I'm not talking about one or two people. They're all, you know, putting so much energy into, you must go on living, you must go on living. You must go and live in. You must go and live in. You must go and live in. Tell him, Bhagavan, 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 please. You know? So those karmas, those Swami Vagishananda said, you know, those karmas, they're magical karmas. What can you do? What can you do? So Swamiji finally says, all right, I'll do that. I will do this. I will change my sankalpa and do the dialysis. Swamiji resisted, absolutely not. Resisted, no, I'm sorry, even to Modi. He said, no, I made my sankalpa, it's clear. And Modi said, but Swamiji, I need you. And Swamiji cracked a little bit and he said, I'll think about it. You know? And so many people saying, please Swamiji, I'm not ready for you to go, you know? So Swamiji finally said, okay. But why did he say okay? It's the karmas of all of the prayers of all of the people. You know, the pressure, yeah, it had its result. Even as I'm sure Ishwar has heard big mass, massive prayers going up. And Bhagavan, has got to the creation itself is affected by that. You know, we can anthropomorphize it and say and think that Bhagavan is saying, oh my gosh, okay. But it is kind of like that. Even if Bhagavan doesn't say, oh my gosh, okay, we have to do something here. The creation says that. By the strength of the prayers. The prayers are karmas. They're a karma. They're not just nothing. They're an actual karma. That's why your prayers and your intent, it actually matters. And it actually matters because it's a subtle karma. You know? And it affects the universe. It affects Ishwara. But it's not like Ishwara is a little man in heaven. You know? Yeah.
So if the free will is only in terms of the jiva's free wills, then I'm wondering a little bit about a term that I've heard used by other teachers a few times, calling Bhagavan the all-compassionate Ishvara.
Why I'm not going along with the free will is because it's a term that's given to the jiva that has free will within the prarabdha karma. And so when you talk about Ishvara having free will, who is he having free will and for what? Because already he is the whole. He is the whole thing. So where is there free will when you have infinite knowledge and the whole is totally already you? And so I don't see it as a question of free will. That's very anthropomorphic to me. That's why. But if you say, why is Ishwara all compassion? Because Ishwara is Brahman. You know? And so the whole universe is a manifestation of Brahman. Dharma is a manifestation of Brahman. Brahman is Ananda. You know? So what if you think of Dharma itself as a manifestation of Brahman? Then what is the essential nature of being itself is Ananda, you know. On the other hand, Ishwara is also called as Krishna, Janardana. Janardana is the one who punishes adharma. He punishes the adharmis by giving papa. You know, but it's not like Ishwara is standing there, you know, with a whip, or sometimes how God is portrayed in Christianity, where he has a thunderbolt in one hand or something like that. That he's ready to Yahweh is ready to strike down the bad ones, the adharmis. But Janardana is like that too, the one who will strike down the adharma. You know, that's why we suffer. You know, there's a lot of suffering in this world, and so that's Ishwara bringing suffering to the living beings also. What's your question? I got lost.
All compassionate Ishvara, I guess. Because I think if I think of Ishvara in terms of Ishvara being in the form of all the laws of the universe, that makes it feel like a soulless.
No, because the self of all of those laws is the Satchidananda self. That's not never can be soulless, because the only thing there is the soul, so to speak, is Brahman.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes we use soul, we mean the transmigrating jiva by soul. But if you mean the conscious being, and then when you think of the Ishvara, the Brahma Swarupa, as limitless ananda, limitless wholeness, limitless fullness, there's nothing evil about it, not anything. Then from that, that is what actually exists. So the Maya Upadhi, right, has that as its being. And even though it's infinite and contains all of the opposites, everything, its being is Satchidananda. You know, and from Satchidananda, that very beneficent being that you are, that is your own self, beneficent, I mean it's ananda, it's whole and full and complete, how is evil going to come from that? Evil can be within it by... Swamiji will never use the word evil, actually. We use the word ignorance. That we get ourselves into very dark places because we're so intent on fulfilling our desires, but we're intent on filling our desires no matter what, because we want to be happy and we want to really get ourselves back. We want to get back the ananda that we are. And because we are so ignorant, ignorant even in Vyavahara, no idea of dharma, adharma, we don't care about that. You know, all the very laws of nature, the laws of humanity, were somehow, is askew for us. And so we're kind of, sociopath, like a sociopath who has no conscience. All they care about, all they see, honestly, all they care, all that they see is what I want. There's no guilt. There's no guilt or shame. These mechanisms are broken. You know, and so they just go after what they want. Bhagavan gives in the Gita, in chapter 16 and 17 actually, an incredible breakdown of the mind of a rakshasa and the mind of an asura. And you would think, oh my gosh, the Gita, you know, what, it's a couple thousand years old or whatever. And he knows exactly what it is. Even in those days, that sociopathic mind was there. He describes it perfectly. That's somebody who really only cares about money and power and cares nothing about the welfare of other beings at all, unless those other beings are helpful to him. And as soon as they're not helpful, you don't care at all. So all you care about is your money, power, fame, this type of thing. That's it. That's what you're after. And everything else goes to the way it's... He describes this perfectly. And it's really sobering. And he describes all of this because we all have these tendencies in ourselves. We have all the sattva, we have rajas, we have tamas. We have all of this inside. It's just not dominant. But when these type of tendencies, rajas and sattva, tamas tendencies come up, then you want to recognize them so that you can transform them. And so he spent like the whole, especially the whole chapter 17, going through all the asuric and rajasic qualities. Just so, you know, when one rises in your mind, you can say, that's not something I want, you know. So we having free will, we can get ourselves into a lot of trouble. So you can't think compassionate as in terms of a compassionate person, per se. But in some ways you can. Even a compassionate person, doesn't mean they say yes all the time. Doesn't mean they don't give any boundaries. You know. Or have a firm hand now and then.
Could you say that, see, compassionate in terms of if I follow dharma, then I will live as much in harmony as possible. And that's kind of the compassionate thing that's available to me.
I don't know, I'm resisting a little bit using the word compassionate because it's anthropomorphic.
Mm.
You know, so somehow it doesn't quite fit, but it doesn't not quite fit anyway. Well, one thing we can say that maybe is in line with what you're saying and what Swamiji has said before, Dharma is the great protector. If you stay within Dharma, then all of the fruits of your action in terms of punya papa and the immediate fruits, the drishtapalas, the immediate fruits of your action and the subtle fruits of your action in terms of punya and papa are all in order. They're all positive. They're all supportive. Where adharma brings about negative immediate results, you know, because to the degree you hurt somebody or cheat somebody or any of these things, you are actually experiencing and taking on what you're doing. So you think you're pulling the wool over somebody's eyes or something like that. But when you're doing that to somebody else, you will be feeling that that's being done to you, or that could be done to you, because you're doing it, you know. If you hurt somebody, or more, even more to the point, if you hurt somebody, then you feel the hurt, right? The hurting act that you're doing, you feel the hurt. The angry act that you're doing, you feel the anger. All of it. So the one who puts in the weapon, you know, who punctures with the blade themselves, you know, is hurt. And so any type of a dharma is going to make you very uncomfortable, right? And so that's just on the drishtapala, the immediate results. But then the long-term adrishtapala, punya and papa, that's also there. You're not being protected by that because those will result in more negative experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And say you've spent your life as what we call a dharmanishta. And we're not talking even about knowledge now, but you've spent a life where what is most important to you is Bhagavan, really, is Dharma, doing the right thing, integrity, and all of that. That's what's most important and has been for your life. Then, at the time of your death, what are you? You're a Dharmanishta. Nishta means you're firmly, your highest value, your commitment is to Dharma. It's been committed to Dharma all your life. Now, at the time of death, that's what you are. And so now this is what you're going to be attracting to you in terms of the people in your prarabdha, the type of work that you do. Everything is going to all be within Dharma. Whereas say you were a thief who committed lots of crimes and murders, like mafia guy or whatever, and you have that type of mind when you die, then that you're an adharmanishta, right? And that's what you're going to be attracted in terms of your parents, in terms of the life that you live, the people that are surrounding you, all of that. And now you have to get out of that somehow. But that's the type of karma, the type of life that you'll be attracting. Even though you'll have a mix of punya and papa, for any birth here, it'll be a mix. Still, you know, who you are is going to be attracting punya and papa within the darkness of that adharmic commitment. You see what I mean? So dharma is the great protector. So all the shastra says that too. I think we know it also. Swamiji's book, Value of Values, the whole thing of what he says is that Dharma is self-evident to the human being because you know on your side of it, doing to others as you would have done, let me do to others as I would have done to myself. You know how you want others to treat you. It's innate. and you know how you don't want others to treat you. So you're very, very clear. You want to be loved, you want to be respected, you want people to be honest with you, you want them to help you when you're in need, you know, you want to be given the benefit of doubt, you want to be cared about, etc. Everybody. Nobody says, I want to be hated, I don't want anybody to give me the benefit of the doubt, I want people to steal from me, you know, and I want them to lie to me and betray me, and I'd like them to steal all my money too. You know, nobody feels that way. That's why the ten, everybody can kind of relate to the Ten Commandments. I want somebody to take away my husband. You know? Flirt with my husband, take him away. Win him over. Adultery, you know. So all those Ten Commandments, even you should have no false gods before me, because your religion is so important. Your God is so important. You know? All of these things, and if you really contemplate on them, I'm just talking about Ten Commandments. The Dharma is much more than that. But you know what it is. The problem is because of your raga dvesha, because of your likes and dislikes, what your needs, what you want, you can put that Dharma on the back burner when it comes to how you are toward other people. You expect everyone to be dharmic toward you, you know, to follow the rules toward you. But you can put it on the back burner. It can become secondary to your desires. That's the problem. And so it has to become primary for us. Way more important than our desires. That are always where you feel, I would always, under all circumstances, choose Dharma. Choose Dharma over my pleasure. You know, because the pleasure is useless without, if it doesn't take place within Dharma. It's very painful. But you learn that over time.
Swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah gobrahmanebhyah shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini Desho yam kshobarahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarvesham swastir bhavatu Sarvesham shantir bhavatu Sarvesham purnam bhavatu Sarvesham mangalam bhavatu Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschit dukkha bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya, Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.